Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, as well as on the WDIY app. Podcasts of prior shows are also available on many streaming services, as well as the Public Affairs tab at wdiy.org. Today is August 7th, 2024. The markets were down today, with the Dow closing at 38,763. The S&P at, 5199? Can't read my own writing. NASDAQ at 16,195. Yeah, the S&P at 5199. Tonight, we are talking about required minimum distributions and some updates on that. We are live. We'll take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The phone number for questions is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and Bob will bring it in. If you have questions outside of the format here, you can also email the questions to yourfinancialchoices.com, yourfinancialchoices.com. So we are going to talk about required minimum distributions this evening and some updates. I will tell you that I'm going to be referencing an article from Morningstar to talk about it. But first, let me just kind of give some general overview, and then I'll kind of try to dig into some more of the detail or more complicated explanations for it. So required minimum distributions, what do we mean by that? And most of you might know. Many of you may be in a period of time where you're taking a required minimum distribution, but this audience could be wide and varied, and you might be 23 years old and have no idea what I'm talking about. But believe it or not, you could be affected by this. So no matter what your age, anyone listening could be impacted by what I'm going to talk about when we talk about required minimum distributions. So here's the premise. Let me lay the groundwork. While we're working, the IRS has tax incentives for people to save for their retirement. Many years ago, people would rely on Social Security, and you often hear that Social Security was never intended to completely cover your retirement cash needs. It wasn't supposed to be your only resource. It is some people's only resource. It all depends on when you grew up, what kind of work you had, did you work? As to what kind of benefit one might get from Social Security. You might have been, my own mother who was born in 1930. I mean, she just did not have the same type of retirement vehicles available to her that some people experience today and, has Social Security. And who knew that maybe when she was in her 20s that she might have to plan for living to be 94, which is what she is. So young people, my first piece of advice is save early and save often, as they say, because you don't know what your longevity or life expectancy will be. So the concept is you have to save for retirement. when we work, we pay into Social Security. We pay in some of our paychecks, and our employers pay in some of our paychecks. And if we're self-employed, we're paying both the employee and employee side. And it's a way to save for retirement. And when we're eligible, and there's different ages that we may be eligible or circumstances that we're eligible for Social Security, we get a payment from that system that we've paid into all those years. So that's Social Security. But that was not supposed to be our only resource for retirement. So, you know, the government gives us certain incentives to encourage us to save for retirement. I've talked about this on prior shows. And that incentive is certain tax incentives. So they'll say, if you put some of your money away into a retirement account, there's different kinds of retirement accounts we can have. We can have an individual retirement account that we're kind of managing on our own. And we might have something called a 401k or a 403b. Those are simply the Internal Revenue Code sections that provide the guidance for those retirement vehicles. And we have IRS guidance because there's certain rules around 401ks and 403bs, both for the employer and for the employee. Because remember, I said the government is encouraging us to save for our retirement. There's certain incentives around that. And so there are certain guidelines around encouraging those incentives, protecting those incentives, protecting your saving, et cetera. So we have individual retirement account I mentioned, and we have employer plans that would be another vehicle to save for retirement. There are other ways to save for retirement too. It could be a savings account. It could be a brokerage account. I'm simply talking about certain retirement vehicles that have been established through legislation that give employees or self-employed people incentives to save for their future retirement. Now, an individual retirement account has certain elements of how you can contribute to it, when you can contribute to it. Basically, you have to have some earnings, and then if you don't have any other retirement plans, like through an employer, you can put money into this individual account, and it's capped per year. It changes every year, and it depends on your age. But let's say it's $7,500, and if you're over 50, you can do another $1,000. That's like maybe $8,500 per year if you're not subject to any restrictions. And you have to have earnings. If you're working for an employer, the limits for a 401k and 403b are much higher, and you can put away a lot more money. And I'm going off the top of my head here tonight. So let's say it's $22,500. Is it $23,000 now? I think it's $23,000 for 2024. If you could put $23,000, and if you're over 50, you can put an additional $7,500. So now we're looking at $30,500. It's a much higher amount that you can put away into a retirement account through work. Number one, again, you have to have the earnings. And number two, cash flow, et cetera, to put away that money into that 401k or 403b if your employer provides those plans. So a couple different ways to save. And the incentive is you get a tax deduction. You don't pay tax on that money today. So you actually have more of your money working because you haven't had to put taxes. You didn't have to pay taxes on it. So you have more money working for you. Your cash flow is freed up a little bit, whatever it might be. All right. Ways to save. Now, over the years, the retirement incentives have evolved because there could be times where people didn't need the tax break. They didn't need the tax deduction, but they still wanted to save for their retirement. What other incentive could be given? And one was developed, and we call that the Roth IRA. It was named after, some politician, the Roth IRA. And then that further evolved into a designated Roth option on certain 401ks, meaning certain 401ks where employers have adopted the Roth feature for their 401k. And the incentive there is you don't get the tax deduction today, because remember I said maybe you don't need it. But the incentive is it's going to grow tax-free. All right? So right now, this first part of the show, we've talked about building up our retirement accounts. Now, there's always a 1-2 punch on this. And when we come back from our first break, I'll talk to you a little bit about that and what that means for required minimum distributions and some updates to that. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY members have exclusive access to our weekly member ticket giveaway. That's a new drawing every week for the best events the Lehigh Valley has to offer. Concerts, festivals, film screenings, theater performances, and more. Last year, WDIY gave away over 2,000 tickets to our members. So don't miss your chance. Become a WDIY member today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and Bob will run it in. If you're not comfortable with that, you can also email the questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight we're talking about required minimum distributions and updates, and I'm just trying to set the table for what all this means. And again, I want to repeat for anyone listening tonight, at any age, you may be someone who would be subject to required minimum distributions. And that is basically a required minimum distribution on a retirement account. And as I go through the show, I'll tell you why that it could be any of you, meaning you have to pay attention even if you're not old. Okay? So setting the table for how we get to the point of a required minimum distribution. We've talked about saving for retirement. So Social Security isn't the only, you know, retirement option. Some people have pensions, some people don't. But basically, you want to try to save so that you can supplement your cash flow needs in retirement years beyond what Social Security and or a pension may provide to you. So you're saving during your working years in hopefully some kind of retirement accounts, and you may be saving in a separate kind of brokerage account as well. Totally fine. It's just that there's incentives from the government to save either on a pre-tax basis, meaning I'm putting money in a retirement account today and getting a tax deduction, or on an after-tax basis, which is in a Roth account, which will grow income tax-free. So we're going to grow these accounts. In the, I've mentioned an IRA, you can't save as much. When you have an employer plan, you can save way more money and do it much faster that way. And so you want to understand what your options are and what you have available. If you don't have an employer plan available, you have excess cash flow, you can certainly save in an individual account. If you're self-employed, you can set up a solo 401k if that works for you. So, okay, savings options. Now, the IRAs and the, you know, the regular 401ks or 403bs, you're getting a tax deduction while you're working, at least for federal purposes. It depends on your state whether you're getting a deduction or not. In Pennsylvania, we don't get a deduction, and that's because Pennsylvania doesn't tax retirement accounts when we take the money out in a qualified distribution. So for federal purposes, we're getting a tax deduction, and it means more of our money is working for us. I've mentioned, but then the consequence of that is when we eventually take it out, it will be income taxable to us. And what's income taxable to us when we take it out is not just the money we put in, but also the earnings and growth on those assets. Contrarily, on the Roth side, whether we do a Roth IRA, which is, remember, that individual kind of account where you can't put as much in, Roth IRA, compared to a Roth, designated Roth in a 401k where we can put away a lot more money, we're putting that in after tax, so we're not getting a tax deduction for that today. But then those growth and earnings will come out income tax free when we eventually take out a qualified distribution. Now, a little asterisk here, until certain legislation is implemented, when you have a 401k at work and the employer does a match, under today's legislation, if the employer is doing a match on a Roth contribution that you're making, your Roth contribution will be income tax-free. The growth in earnings on your Roth contribution will be income tax-free in a qualified distribution, but the employer match would be still taxable. They are changing that. I think it's going to be implemented in 2025, that you can elect to have the employer match taxable today, so that even the employer monies that go in, any growth in earnings on that would be income tax free. But that's if we choose to have the employer match taxed today, okay? Because right now the employer matches aren't taxed. So that's one way to keep that all tax free. All right. Otherwise, the employer match would be income taxable because you haven't paid tax on that money, okay? All right. So we have some retirement accounts that are growing on a pre-tax basis, subject to income tax when we take it out. And then we have Roth money, Roth IRAs or Roth 401k that's growing income tax-free. And when we take it out eventually, would be in a qualified distribution, would be income tax-free. Okay, two buckets. There's something, the IRS eventually wants their taxes. So remember, on the Roth, they already got their taxes. So they might not care about that as much. Hence why on Roth IRAs, while we're living, if we're the owner and we have a Roth IRA, or if we have a Roth 401k and we hit some magical age, the IRS says, you don't have to take it out. We already got your taxes. You don't have to take it out. There are no required minimum distributions for the owner. I'm being very careful about my words, so please pay attention. There's no required minimum distribution on a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k for the owner. Okay? On the regular IRA or the 401k, when we retire, we reach our required minimum distribution age. That's going to be a magic age I'll tell you about in a minute. When we eventually take out a distribution, because we have to out of those accounts, those are taxable. We have to take them out. They're income taxable. And why do we have to take them out? Because the IRS, as I said, eventually wants their taxes. And, you know, we always thought they didn't want to wait too long, but they keep increasing the required minimum distribution age. I'll talk to you about that too. So much to say. So the required minimum distribution age has slowly moved up over the years. It was 70 and a half for a very long time, meaning the IRS says, hey, folks, you can save your money for a long time. It's growing all tax deferred, in essence. Those taxable IRAs or taxable 401k is growing tax deferred until you take the money out. And then once you take the money out, you're going to pay tax on it. And the IRS used to say, hey, we're not going to let you defer it forever. You got to start taking it out at 70 and a half. Then they raised the age to 72. Then they raised the age to 73. But the age for 73 is only for some of you. Some of us, the age is 75. So they keep raising the age. So anybody who's 73 this year, it's definitely 73, and you're going to have a required minimum distribution. Little footnote here, just to keep my younger audience interested. Remember I said you too could be subject to required minimum distributions despite your age. Doesn't matter what your age is, you could be subject to required minimum distributions. So I'll give you more about that. We want you to stay tuned and keep listening. But right now, I'm just talking about the people who are the owners of the accounts. So required minimum distribution on the taxable IRA, taxable 401k, where you got a tax benefit during your working years, and now it's time for you to start taking some money out. And you don't have to wait till required minimum distribution age. You could take out beforehand for sure. You just have your income tax then. If you take it out too early, there could be early premature Tax consequences, there's a 10% penalty for a premature distribution unless an exception applies. I'm talking about people who are beyond that. You know, it's a qualified distribution. You can take it out at 65. You can take it out at 60. You can take it out at 70. You definitely have to take it out at required minimum distribution age. And it's a formula. It's based on your life expectancy. And you have a minimum amount you have to take out. That's on the taxable side. Remember the Roth side, we don't have to take out. All right. So the ages have changed. Note the ages. Folks, we're at the second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can give your question to Cindy. Just let her know if you want to talk live on air or if off air, they'll write it down and bring it in to me. Questions can also be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com. I'm going off the top of my head tonight, folks, and there's so much swirling in my head that I want to share. I hope I get it all out and get it in the right order. So we're talking about required minimum distributions and some updates. And one of the, you know, more recent updates was the change in the required minimum distribution age from 70 and a half to 72 to 73 and even to 75. And I think it's probably projected to increase over time as well. Just because those are the ages for your required minimum distribution does not mean you have to wait until then. You can take it out before. And you also don't have to wait like for your birthday. You could take it out before your birthday or after your birthday in the, you know, in that year, as long as the year you reach your required minimum distribution, you know, review what you have to take out and take it out anytime during that year. There is a special rule that says you have until April 1st of the year following the year you turn those required minimum distribution ages. But in that year, you would have to have a double RMD, a double required minimum distribution. And sometimes that just doesn't work out for most people for tax purposes. But if you're someone who is employed making boatloads of money in the year you turn, you know, required minimum distribution age, and you retired that year, but you had a huge bonus of $1 million, well, it might not make sense for you to take out your first RMD that year if you have until April 1st of the next year. So you could defer it and then do it in the next year. But it's rare that I see that being beneficial. I've done it before for people, but it's not that common. So those are the required minimum distributions. I said you do not have to take a required minimum distribution on a Roth for the owner. Another time where you may not be subject to a required minimum distribution at those ages is if you're continuing to be employed by that employer. So if you are someone who would have been subject to a required minimum distribution at age 73, but you continue to work for that employer, then you will, and it's, you know, a separate employer, you don't own the company, that some, you know, generalizations around that rule. You guys, I can't tell all the details. Remember, this is educational, but there are some exceptions and little, you know, fine print to some of these comments. But if you are continuing to work for a company as an employee, where you don't have, like, you know, ownership kind of thing, you don't have to take a required minimum distribution from your 401k in that circumstance. But if you retired and you kept your 401k plan at your employer, but you retired several years ago, and when you reach age 73, you will have a required minimum distribution. And keep in mind that IRAs are separate from 401ks. If I have five IRAs, I can satisfy my required minimum distribution from any one of those IRAs or all of them or whatever, mix and match. The IRS doesn't care. They look at your IRAs all as one for separate taxpayers. Husband and wives can't count them, you know, together. So separate taxpayers. If I have five IRAs, the IRS counts them all as one. They don't care where I take the money as long as I take out the required amount. But my 401k, if it's separate, I have to take a separate for our required minimum distribution from my 401k. All right, so just keep that in mind as well. But if you're working, continuing to work, that's an exception to the required minimum distribution. But as soon as you retire, if you retire in that year and you're 75, you will have your required minimum distribution requirement triggered at that point. Okay, so required minimum distributions. Roth IRAs do not have required minimum distributions. Roth 401ks would not have them. Some people will roll their 401k over to an IRA when they retire, or maybe sometime after they retire for whatever reason they might have waited. If they eventually roll over their 401k to a rollover IRA, then you're back to those IRA bunching rules. You don't, it's not separate anymore. It's just part of all your other IRAs. That's okay. If you have a Roth IRA or designated Roth in your 401k, make sure that if you are going to roll it over, that you roll over the Roth money separately into a Roth account, not into a regular IRA. You want to always keep your Roth money separate. Roths do not have required minimum distributions. Now, stay with me here. What would be the advantage to leaving Roth money in a retirement account and not taking a required minimum distribution from it? What is the advantage? What did I say? Roth IRAs grow income tax-free. Roth 401ks grow income tax-free. I might want to keep that money growing as long as possible, income tax-free, until I really need it. So I might work through my taxable money first. It all depends on your situation. I'm not, you know, suggesting one thing or another, but I love the Roth vehicles as a way to really grow, you know, accounts, income tax-free, and it gives, you know, the owner a lot of flexibility and leverage. So we've got retirement accounts. Hopefully you're all staying with me and you're understanding. We have certain ages. A couple other points about required minimum distributions and these ages. So you heard me mention age 70 and a half, and it changed to age 72, and it changed to age 73, and it's going to change to age 75. So the required minimum distribution age keeps going up. This is important only for those taxable IRAs or 401ks. There's something called a qualified charitable distribution. I've also talked about this many times. I love this. It's for our philanthropic people out there. You can use your IRA to fulfill your philanthropic desires, meaning charitable contributions through an IRA, not through a 401k, not through a 401k. Now, if you roll your 401k over to an IRA rollover, you can do it, but the IRA has a rule we can use some of our IRA money for charitable giving. They didn't change the age on that. So it used to be you had to be age 70 and a half to do it because that aligned with the required minimum distribution age. When they upped the RMD age to 72, 73, 75, they did not up the age that you could do a qualified charitable distribution, which is really nice. So any clients who are 70 and a half and not a day before, you can make a distribution out of your IRA directly to charity, meaning don't put it in your bank account and write a check. No. You have to contact the custodian and say, I want to make a qualified charitable distribution directly to my charity, and they'll write the check directly to the charity. You can deliver it, but they're writing the check directly to the charity out of your IRA. And guess what? You don't have to pay income tax on it. Now, they put some rules around it that benefit for us, and it's up to $100,000 scheduled to increase with inflation. I think this year it's still $100,000. You could do up to 100,000. It doesn't mean you can only do 100,000. It doesn't mean you can only do your RMD. Remember, because at 70 and a half, you don't have an RMD anymore. But maybe I want to give $5,000 to my church, and rather doing it out of your bank account, I might as well do it out of my taxable IRA account. So you can make those contributions to the church or the school or whatever it might be, the United Way, right out of your IRA by the custodian writing a check. $5,000, you don't pay income tax on it. So not more than about $100,000 per person. So that's another thing that can be impacted by RMD. So instead of having to take an RMD, put it in my bank account and writing the check, once I get to RMD age and I have to take it, instead I could do some of my charitable giving out of that. And then I'm not paying income tax on it. It's a great, great benefit. Folks, we're at the halfway point and I still have more to tell the young people who are under the RMD age why this may impact you. And we'll continue our story when we get back from this break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Bob and Cindy are in the studio waiting for your calls. We are talking about RMDs, required minimum distributions, and updates to that. And I do have an article I will reference from Morningstar shortly, which has a lot of the complicated details. It might be, you know, sometimes it's hard to share when things get too complicated, but, you know, that's why we have financial advisors. We're supposed to keep track of all these things. So we've talked about saving for retirement. We talked about different vehicles, pre-tax and after-tax. We've talked about required minimum distributions. We've talked about the ages of the required minimum distributions and how that is changing. And just for your information, the age for, I mentioned it was going to age 75. That is going to start for participants born on or after 1960. Okay, so if you were born before 1960, then it's 73 now. But born after January 1st, 1960, it'll be age 75. All right, so let me get my bearings here. We're talking about IRAs, RMDs. Why is this important? What happens when we are the owner of the account is we have those rules about how we can take a distribution and when we can take a distribution and the required minimum distribution age and the qualified charitable distribution. But what happens if something happens to us? So if we pass away, what happens to those retirement accounts? Generally, we will name a beneficiary. If we name a spouse as a beneficiary, if we have a spouse, then the spouse can take ownership of those retirement accounts and they can continue and follow the rules, whatever that might have been for them. So if, you know, I said there's no required minimum distribution on Roths, and if I'm a spouse and I inherit my husband's Roth, I make it my own, I have no required minimum distributions. If I inherit my spouse's 401k or IRA and the IRS says I can make it my own, it's now the Lori Siebert, you know, IRA, the Lori Siebert 401k. Now I follow the rules for my required minimum distribution just as if I was the owner. No big deal. But when a spouse passes away, I could also have the option of taking it as a beneficiary IRA. And there's certain rules and reasons why I might want to do that. I'm a little complicated right now for part of my story. Okay, so we're not going to get into that. But a spouse does have an option to actually take it as a beneficiary. And there might be certain circumstances where that might make sense. Well, I'll give you a quick example. What if you're 45 years old and you have a spouse who passed away and they were 70 and 75, whatever it might be. They pass away and I've inherited their IRA. Do I, and maybe it's my only source of income and I'm 45 years old. Remember I said earlier, there are certain rules around distributions around retirement accounts. I've talked about qualified distribution. If I'm under age 59 and a half, and I take money out of my IRA at age 45, I will have not only income tax on my distribution, I'll also have a 10% penalty on a premature distribution. But if I am a beneficiary of an inherited IRA, there's different rules that are going to apply to me. And one of those is an exception to the 10% penalty. When you get a 1099-R document, a 1099-R tax statement, 1099-R, reflecting that I've taken a distribution from an IRA, and if I'm age 45 and I've inherited this IRA and I take money out, there's going to be a special code on that 1099-R that's going to tell your accountant you are not subject to the 10% penalty. It's a code 4. That code 4 says that the distribution is, you know, because of death. So you have a distribution. It's not subject to the 10% penalty. It's only subject to income tax. So this is where I'm saying you could be kind of any age and you may have a distribution from a retirement account. Now, as to required minimum distributions, this is where there's been some updates and some new rules around required minimum distributions. And I'm always surprised when clients might come in and they will be under the assumption that certain rules apply to them as they've learned them. So this is why I love doing the radio show and why I try to like alert young people to listen, because the rules could be different. Because sometimes people don't pay attention to changing rules because they're not applicable to them at the time. But then they might remember and think these old rules still apply, and they didn't realize they had to pay attention because when they weren't looking, you know, legislation changed. So what it used to be is, in a nutshell, is if someone passed away, the owner passed away, and you inherit and you're a non-spouse, let's say you're not a spouse, you're not taking it over as a, you know, your own, you're a non-spouse beneficiary, the required minimum distribution rules were based on your life expectancy, in a nutshell. So the life expectancy, if I'm 45 and my life expectancy was 40 years, I could take it out over, you know, 40 years in essence. You know, that would be my required minimum distribution, because inherited accounts have always had a required minimum distribution other than, you know, the Roth. The owner does not have a required distribution for the Roth. But if I'm inheriting, I have a required minimum distribution over my life expectancy. The rules changed with Secure Act 2.0, and the rules changed and said now there's certain beneficiaries that have to take it out on an accelerated basis. So remember I said spouses still have the option to make it their own. There's special rules for people who are disabled or for minors or for people who are less than 10 years younger than the, you know, the decedent. So there's certain rules around certain beneficiaries. But for the majority of people, let's assume the story is your parents passed away and you're inheriting the assets and you're of age. You're, you know, an adult, 21. So now you're subject to required minimum distributions, as I said, just as you would have been a few years ago. But the rules have changed, and the required minimum distribution now for non-spouse beneficiaries who are not otherwise under some other exception, you have to take it out based on another whole set of circumstances. If your parent was required minimum distribution age when they died, now you have to take it out within 10 years, but you have to take out some each year starting, you know, the year after they die. You have 10 years. You have a required amount each year, but you have to have the whole thing out in 10 years. So the each year portion is based on your life expectancy, but it's only for the 10-year period because in 10 years, you still have to take it out. If I inherit $1 million IRA from a parent, my required minimum distribution, I'm making this up, might be, you know, $20,000 in the first year. I'm making this up. Maybe $50,000. Okay, first year, $50,000. Next year, $50,000. Next year, $50,000. By year 10, my $1 million has also grown, and I might have a $1 million IRA distribution in that 10th year. So little incremental required minimum distributions for the non-spouse beneficiary when the owner was already required minimum distribution age. Let's pretend they were not required minimum distribution age. They were age 70. I'm 45. I inherit from my parent who's, I'm making this up because I'm not 45. I'm 45 and my parent was 70 and I inherit. I'm a non-spouse beneficiary. They were not required minimum distribution age. I have $1 million IRA. What is my required minimum distribution for year one? Nothing. What is my required minimum distribution for year two? Nothing. What is it by year 10? Well, that $1 million might have grown to, you know, $2 million. So then in year 10, I have a required distribution of the entire balance within 10 years. If I wait to take it, then I have to take it all out in the 10th year. So now I have the 10-year rule that applies to non-spouse beneficiaries who are not otherwise carved out for whatever reason. And if I was not subject to the annual required minimum distribution because my owner, the decedent who I inherited from, was not RMD age, then I can take it out in any way at all within the 10 years. But if I don't take anything out in year 1 through 9, I have to take the rest out in year 10. Okay? So that's the required amount. That's why I'm careful about using the word required, because you can always take out more. So this is something that we all really have to pay attention to. Think about this for a moment. What I see from my practice is people are in their highest earning years, usually between age 45 to 65, highest earning years, 50 to 55, highest earning years, typically. If you're inheriting from that 75-year-old parent, that 80-year-old parent, and you're going to have, you know, some reasonable amount of retirement income coming from that, a required amount, you could put yourself in a very high tax bracket. This is why we kind of have to pay attention to these things. If you're a young person, the same thing. There's little things we can do to mitigate some of those taxes. I like to say when you inherit, if you have a taxable amount you have to take out and you also are working and you have a 401k, review how much you're contributing to your 401k, because maybe you could increase your contributions to your 401k, get that tax deduction on that side to kind of make up for some of the income you're having to report from a required minimum distribution from, you know, an inherited IRA. So there's different things we can do, but, you know, that's an aside. So just know that there's been an update. The rules have changed. There's this 10-year payout. There was some question about, did people really have to take out an annual required amount for when you inherited from an owner who was RMD age? And most of us read the original rules as there is no required minimum amount as long as we take it out within 10 years. So we were saying, hey, folks, no, you don't have to take it out. You have 10 years to take it out. You don't have to take it out. Well, the IRS finally issued the final regulations to explain it a little bit clearer. And that is what they've explained, what I've already told you, that if your decedent was RMD age, then you have to take a minimum amount each year with the balance out by 10 years. Now, for those people, this legislation was pending for a number of years. I don't have the dates off the top of my head, but for a number of years, we had clients who might have been subject to that rule, and we weren't taking it out because we didn't think that's what the rule was. And ordinarily, the IRS would cause you to have a huge penalty for not taking out a required minimum distribution. Yes, there is a big penalty if you do not take out your required minimum distribution. But in this case, the IRS is waiving any penalties. They're saying, no, you don't, you know, sorry, we messed up. We weren't clear. You don't have to catch up. You don't have to make it up. It's all right. If you didn't do it, we're not going to penalize you. So you still have to have it out within 10 years, but they're not going to make you go back and take out what you didn't. All right. So there's some other, you know, more complicated wording around these updates. I'll see if I can kind of give you some high level updates to that when we get back from our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And when we come back from our break, the first thing I'm going to also comment on is something that was sent through the website from Sean about long-term care insurance. So I'll give you some comments on that. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. You can call in with questions live. We still have time, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and Bob. They'll write it down. I had a question come through the website. It was really a topic idea, which I love. Sean, thank you for sending in the topic idea. I'm always welcoming topic ideas. You guys, I've been doing this a very long time, and I need like some fresh ideas. So bonus points to anyone who sends some to me. But Sean had mentioned that they were looking into long-term care insurance options and realizing that it's more complicated than they thought. And they thought it might be a topic that we could cover. And so I will certainly try to put together a show on maybe some insurance and talk about some long-term care. Sean, it is complicated. And basically what I often tell people, I'll say, here are your options, but it really is a very personal decision. How I frame it to people who have family members who have had maybe strokes or some kind of disease where they've lingered, whether it's Alzheimer's, dementia, where they've lingered for years and they end up in a nursing home. Those are the people who usually want long-term care insurance. And then I have a whole group of clients where, you know, the people just drop dead from heart attacks or old age or whatever it may be. And they're never interested in long-term care. Long-term care can be very expensive these days. It's not like the old days when insurance companies were first rolling these out and they didn't know what that pool was going to be. And from my perspective, what the insurance companies found out is the people who were buying long-term care were people who had experience with family members who all needed long-term care. And if we look at genes and, you know, genetics, then maybe that's the people who were buying it, who kind of all knew in that pool that they would need long-term care. And it became, kind of crippling for that part of the insurance world. And many companies got out of that business of providing long-term care insurance. So it is a little bit more expensive. There are hybrid kind of policies now, and where it's kind of like a life insurance element as well as a long-term care insurance element. I could see where the insurance companies that might have kind of opened the door a little bit to let them offer products, you know, to a broader audience, because now maybe people who didn't think they needed long-term care because everyone in the family drops dead might be more inclined to, well, what if, let me hedge my bets and buy this policy that might offer life insurance in lieu of the long-term care, meaning if I never use the long-term care, whatever I've invested in this particular policy will still pay out some kind of life insurance benefit. So it kind of takes the edge off for people who think, what if I never need that long-term care? It was such a waste of money. Different kinds of policies now. It might be expensive. You can kind of adjust the cost of long-term care based on, you know, the elimination period, how much benefit per day. Is it like a 3-year contract? It is a lifetime contract. I don't know if you can even find those anymore. So I'll look and see if we can get someone to come on and talk about that. So thanks for the show idea, Sean. I appreciate it. In talking about the finalized regulations, this was an article, I believe, from Morningstar where they kind of talk about some key takeaways. So we talked about RMD. Here's some of the terms that could kind of like you know, make your head spin. Designated beneficiary, any individual designated as a beneficiary by the participant. This is a term that's used in the regulations, which is why they're kind of defining it. It's the use of individual is intentional here and excludes non-person beneficiaries such as estates, charities, and corporations. That is critical to know. People may think, oh, I'm going to just make this easy and I'm going to name my estate the beneficiary of my IRA. I hate when I see that, because if you name the estate the beneficiary of your IRA, the required minimum distribution is accelerated. It's accelerated to within 5 years. And there's some other, you know, little nuances around that. If, you know, the person was already RMD age, blah, blah, blah. But most people in an estate want their money right away, so they're not going to want to, you know, wait too long. But it's typically, generally, a 5-year payout. And so you want to be careful about who you're naming as the beneficiary. If it's a charity, that's really easy. That's one of the best ways. I love having clients give their IRAs away to charities because it's not taxable to the charity. So when you're philanthropic and, you know, want to benefit some charity when you pass away, it's a great use of doing that. In fact, I'd rather see you give away your IRA than your cash in your will, because, again, charities don't pay income tax, so why not give them the taxable IRA? There is an exception for certain trusts. So if you name a trust, there are certain exceptions for the trust, but you have to make sure the trust has that, what we call see-through language, to identify an individual beneficiary that has some kind of relationship or life expectancy if you want to stretch out the RMD beyond that 5-year period. Then there's another definition, eligible designated beneficiary. Designated beneficiary who is at the date of the participant's death is a surviving spouse. Remember I said surviving spouses have special rules. They can take it over. A child of the participant who has not yet reached age 21. Then their 10-year period won't start until they're 21. Okay, so prior to that, they have a little bit of wiggle room. Again, it doesn't mean they can't take RMD or a distribution from the IRA. It just means they're not required to. All right. Disabled people are eligible designated beneficiaries, chronically ill individual, or not more than 10 years younger than the participant. And the reason they're kind of defined there is because if they're not more than 10 years younger than the participant, they already have kind of a pretty defined life expectancy, so they kind of can take it out over their life expectancy. Special rules apply for determining if a beneficiary is disabled or chronically ill. Your estate planning attorney can help to determine whether you meet the requirements. Then, of course, they talk about the required beginning date, which I mentioned, is April 1st of the year following the year that you reach that age. But I said, generally, we're seeing people take their first required minimum distribution in the year they turn that RMD age. Then there's certain tables you have to reference for calculating the required minimum distribution. I said it's based on life expectancy. Well, there's different tables we can use. This is where it can get more complicated as well. Normally, if you're doing it through a custodian, they may calculate it. But what my experience has been, if you're a beneficiary of a retirement account, the custodians aren't generally calculating that RMD for you, and you have to figure it out. And it's a kind of a little bit of a different formula than it used to be as well. So we have the Uniform Lifetime Table, which is used to calculate RMDs for participants. And the table assumes the participant's beneficiary is 10 years younger than the participant, regardless of the beneficiary's age. Then we have the Joint and Last Survivor Table. This table is used to calculate RMDs for a participant whose spouse is their sole primary beneficiary and who is more than 10 years younger than the participant. So they're going to make, if you're 70 and your spouse is 40, they're going to let you take out a smaller amount. That's the Joint and Last Survivor Table. If your spouse beneficiary is more than 10 years younger than you, they're going to have your required minimum distribution smaller because they know that money has to last longer. All right. So for anybody out there who has a spouse more than 10 years younger, you have a special table. Single life expectancy table. This table determines life expectancy that a beneficiary must use to calculate annual RMDs for their inherited accounts. And then a successor beneficiary is a beneficiary who inherits a retirement account from the original beneficiary. So if I inherit an IRA from a parent and I have to take it out within 10 years under the new rules, and now I pass away and it goes to my beneficiary, they have to honor the required minimum distribution rules that would have applied to me. All right. Okay. Then there, we talked about the RMD ages increasing from 70 and a half to 72 to 73, and then to 75 for anyone who was born on or after January 1st, 1960. But recall, I said you don't have to wait until then, because here's my little asterisk from my early mention of this, is that if I have a large IRA and I don't have to take any distributions out of it, it's growing tax-free, remember, until I take out a distribution, and it's growing and growing and growing. Well, if I wait till 75, that thing could be huge. And now if I have required minimum distribution, it could also be quite large, and I could end up pushing myself up into a higher tax bracket, or I could cause my beneficiaries who have to take it out over 10 years into a higher tax bracket as well. So just because you don't have to take it until those later ages doesn't mean you want to wait till those later ages. I really like looking at tax brackets and playing with tax brackets. You could do some kind of conversion. You could convert IRA money to Roth IRA money, and that means you're paying taxes on it today, and you're putting it into a Roth where there is not a required minimum distribution. That could, while you're alive, lower your required minimum distribution while you're alive and have less income tax, less distribution during your lifetime, and you've now created maybe an estate planning vehicle where you're passing a tax-free asset to your income tax-free asset to your beneficiaries. I also want to reiterate back onto the Roth. If I've inherited a Roth IRA, remember I said there is no required minimum distribution requirement to the owner of a Roth IRA. I could have a Roth IRA till I'm 95 and never have a required minimum distribution if I'm the owner. But if my beneficiary inherits it, they don't have a required minimum distribution during the 10-year period, but they do have to take it out within 10 years. It will not be income taxable to them, though. So just keep that in mind. We can let that continue to grow and, you know, grow and grow, but by the year 10, they will have to take it out, but it's still not income taxable. There's no income tax on the Roth. Unless you have like some kind of disqualifying disposition, meaning you know, take money out before you're supposed to, blah, blah, blah. But that's rare that that happens. All right. The annual required minimum distribution requirement for post-required minimum distribution 10-year beneficiaries is a lock. It says whether the annual RMD requirement for certain 10-year beneficiaries would stay is one of the most anticipated explanations for the final RMD regulations, and they did keep it. So the 10-year beneficiaries must fully distribute their inherited accounts no later than 10 years after inheriting. A 10-year beneficiary who is subject to annual RMDs is one who inherited a retirement account after 2019, and is either the following: a designated beneficiary who inherited a retirement account from a participant who died on or after their required beginning date, or a successor beneficiary of an eligible designated beneficiary who is taking life expectancy distributions. So you really kind of have to keep track of what you're inheriting. What kind? Is it an IRA? Is it a Roth? Am I, you know, a spouse beneficiary? Am I a non-spouse beneficiary? Am I a minor? Am I disabled? Am I, you know, a trust? Am I an estate? You have to know what kind of beneficiary you are and how old the decedent was, and to know kind of what the distributions are that you would have. Folks, I'm sure I was not able to probably cover everything. In this regard, this is awareness, it's education, it's for you to kind of like have your antenna up if you hear about such things, especially for people who, you know, are not even close to required minimum distribution ages. If you could be a potential beneficiary of any one of these accounts, you really have to understand the rules, because you could be subject to some significant penalties if you're not taking distributions when you're supposed to. I think the IRS has lowered those penalties. It used to be like a 50% penalty on an excess, what they called an excess, accumulation. And I think they're lowering those under these new rules. So, you know, but it's still a penalty. So avoid those by being in the know. I do not have my topic for next week, so we're just going to have to wing it. And I'm sure it'll be some wonderful financial planning topic for next week. And we will put that out in the email that we send out through WDIY and or through Valley National's weekly commentary or, you know, LinkedIn pages, whatever it might be. So stay tuned for whatever that topic will be, but it will be a financial planning topic. And I just want to say thank you to Bob and Cindy for being here. And thank you, James, for being here. Thank you, listeners. I hope you learned something this week. And remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.